your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough, you know, getting on the biggest stage and then, you know, having a couple hiccups. But, you know, adversity is nothing new for me. And I feel like, you know, I'm the same under adversity. You know, I just kind of attack it with calmness and a sharp mind. And I feel like, you know, tough times don't last. So it's a matter of just putting my head down, putting the work in. And I know that, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to come back on top. So it's just a matter of time.
That's Adisa Isaac. Entering his second year in the National Football League, it's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass. News from the nest, Adisa Isaac, you heard it, Vinny, talking about the hiccups or bumps in the road, whatever we want to use as a cliche, which affected greatly his rookie season. But let's go back to his days in college and what the expectations are for him, year two, health permitting him.
Yeah, now Adisa was a fifth-year senior at Penn State. And the reason for that in 2021, what he was talking about, he tore his Achilles in 2021 and he missed the season. Now, this kid's 6'4", 247, ran 4.74, which is it great? Nope. Is it good? Yeah. Yep. And he's got 33 7/8 arms, so you like the arm length. That's good arm length. 34.5 vertical. It's good. That's good. 10.3 broad jump. Good. You know, it's not off the charts, but it's good. 2019, he played 11 games as a reserve, had 14 tackles, 1.5 sacks. And in 2020, 9 games, 13 tackles, 1.5 sacks. And like I said, in 2021, he tore his Achilles. And then he came back in 2022, started all 13 games, had 28 tackles, 11.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. All right, so year two after that Achilles, started all 13 games, 37 tackles, 16 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks. So that was a nice jump for him. Strengths, he's got good size. Effort is off the charts. Athletic ability, he shows a burst. He can drop into coverage. Quick takeoff, good initial punch. Closes down quickly on the backside versus the run. Shows the ability to bend the corner. Uses his hands well to shed. Keeps feet moving in pass. He can find a ball in a run game. He can punch, lockout, shed. Strong. Has some power on the bull rush. He was captain. Good on stunts. Excellent motor and football smarts. Weaknesses, little hip stiffness. Needs to work on some counters. Needs to get stronger and bigger in the lower. Needs a better anchor in the run game. Now, in summary, this kid plays with a great motor. Has some pass rush skill. And with Chuck Smith's help, will develop counters. He needs to get stronger in the lower. But does decent job in run, especially from the backside and slanting. We'll need more bulk setting the edge. We'll struggle in covering with hip stiffs. I like him as a rusher. Strong, quick hands, relentless, and productive. You know, and what have we, you know, and you say, okay, has he got better? I don't know. You know, has he gotten better? You know, he's gotten a little thicker in lower body and stuff, and we're going to see. I mean, last year, he missed so much time with, I think it was hammy, you know, and then he got back and then he hurt it again. So, I mean, we never really got a chance to see him. And I, you know, what we saw at the end of the season, you know, that's not him. We're basing it all on this year. When we get the pads on in a couple weeks now, get the pads on. And then August 7th or August 5th, and that practice versus the Colts, all that kind of stuff's going to be big for him. And we get a chance to see, you know, him rushing the passer. And because of the addition of Mike Green, and Mike Green is not going to be a run defender, so he's going to be that guy that comes in a nickel. So what does that do for Isaac? Isaac has got to be able to play the run. Otherwise, how much rushing time are you going to get if Mike Green is third?
Isaac versus Ajabo, though, where do you stand in regard? Is he a bubble guy? Only year two in?
I would say no. And the reason being, Bob, is Ajabo, this is year four. I mean, it's a pooper get off the pot for Ajabo, you know, because he's a free agent after the season. So with Isaac, you know, we really haven't seen him. So I don't think so. You know, I think he's solidified on the 53 with Ajabo. Ajabo got to, like, be off the charts in camp, preseason games. You know, he's got to be like, damn, now that is what we saw at Michigan. Otherwise, I think he'll be gone.
Yeah, Isaac, four games, two tackles last year. For the Ravens, it is rookie season. News from the Nesbitt at 81.057 to Penn. Another second-year guy with maybe bigger hopes, TJ Tampa.
Yeah, I really like this guy. TJ's from Iowa State. He was a senior also. He's 6'1", 190, ran 4.52. 32 and an ace arm, so he's got good length. In 2020 at Iowa State, 9 games as a reserve, had 5 tackles. 2021, 13 games, 5 starts, 18 tackles, 3 passes broken up. 2022, 12 starts, 40 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 1 interception, 9 PBUs, quarterback rating against him, 70.7. In 23, 12 starts, 44 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 interceptions, 7 PBUs, quarterback rating against him, 54.8. He had hamstring surgery, no combine. So that when he did his workout and stuff, he ran 4.52. I'm guessing now that he's over that, he will run, play faster than that. His strengths, he's got good size, good length, shows good hands. He's physical, a hit, smart in zone, likes to throw body around, long arms help with deflections, quick read and react in zone, good reading quarterback in zone, good eyes in zone, good ball awareness, plays with passion, uses hands and length and press, uses hands to get off blocks well, has good ball skills, weakness, time, speed, little high in his pedal, catch up speed versus big speed, change of direction versus quick receivers. Must wrap consistently, will gamble and take risk on the ball. In summary, TJ has good height, size, build, and arm length, and he uses all those traits. He'll need more coaching to develop in man-to-man and his pedal and tackling wrapping, because at Iowa State, a lot of zone stuff. He's tough, physical kid, plays with passion. He's a player. May fit better with team that plays zone and use him to press. How will he hold up versus elite speed and quick pro receivers? That's my question. And what I saw last year at training camp, Bob, deep speed, catch up, same type of thing. But, you know, in the OTAs and the mini camp, had a couple interceptions. He plays the ball extremely well. He's got good hands. He's got good size. I love the kid, and I think he's going to help them a ton this year. And they've got him playing on the outside a lot, so we'll see. And we'll see if he can hold up. But, you know, I mean, if we know it, other teams know it, they know it, you got to protect him, you know, on that deep speed stuff.
Yeah, TJ Tampa, one of the more intriguing guys for the Ravens. They have the best secondary, we think, in the NFL, at least on paper, and he's going to be a part of it. We got more of that coming your way. NFL Lunchtime later in the show. Coming up next, let's count some late week money and talk about the sports subjects of this day. Buy or sell right now, Orioles and Mets, top of the first. Charlie Morton, a couple of strikes away from getting out of a first inning jam. Hopefully he does. When we return, Daniel Oyefusi joining us at 12:30, talking about the Browns. They're predicted last, rightfully so, in the AFC North. But is there a sleeper in there somewhere?
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or selling?
I'm not gonna buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Fire sell time. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan here on this Total Request Thursday. Pick a song, we'll play it. Send your request, Nolan McGraw. Plot Sport text line at 410-583-1057. Get your votes in. Featured Artist Friday. That reveal coming up in a couple of minutes. Morton did get out of the jam. Holiday let off for the Orioles, but Westberg and Laureano have flown out. So, Muscles O'Neal, he's at the plate trying to do a little damage here in the bottom of the first inning. Orioles and Mets in a doubleheader. Orioles trade Brian Baker for the 37th pick in the draft to the Rays. So that's your breaking sports news. There's other stuff happening. How about we count that dough first, shall we? By yourself.
We're making some money today. Dow's up 236. S&P's up 10. NASDAQ's down 23. DraftKings up 45 cents to 43.25. Under Armour's up 22 cents, $6.82.
Well, old muscles couldn't get it done there, O'Neal.
Yeah. Pop up to the first baseman.
Anyway.
Where's that spinach?
Where to begin here? How about this Mariners and Yankees series this week? It'll conclude later tonight, but featuring a battle between the two best power hitters right now in the American League. Talking about Aaron Judge, of course, and the more surprising one, Cal Raleigh. He is surprising, just that, leading the way. 36 homers to Judge's 34, and to do so at the catcher position, even more impressive. To add some more intrigue here is the fact that both, right now, Judge and Raleigh, on a better home run pace than what Judge set back in 2022 when he broke Roger Maris's record for the American League home run total. Buy or sell, Bob, Judge and Raleigh will become the first duo to surpass 60 homers in the same season since Bonds and Sosa in 01.
Let me spell it for you. Capital S, capital E, capital L, capital L. Selling it. Cal Raleigh, by the way, is having a monster season, to your point. Switch hitting catcher. Sound familiar? Got paid by Seattle, right? They didn't get an extension in the offseason?
I think so, yeah.
Kind of be that benchmark a little bit for Adley here. So we'll see. Not to put Adley, we're not here to rag on Adley Rutschman, but Judge hitting 60, I mean, that guy plays slow pitch softball, but he goes on these, like, these two-week runs where he just, a lot of Ks, no contact. I mean, he had a couple ribbies last night, which we'll get to in the AL East report, but I could see him doing it. Raleigh's 14 from 50. I think he'll hit 50. I don't know if he'll pass even Griffey's Mariners record. So 60 home runs apiece, that's a negative.
It just brings back bad memories of the final month of 2022, where it was nonstop coverage of Aaron Judge, like ESPN cut-ins every day in the middle of their games. Let's check in live on his at-bat.
Well, you don't have to worry about that now because ESPN doesn't give a crap about baseball anymore. Right. Get ready for the Lakers and Cowboys coming down your way.
Go over to the NFL here. A couple intriguing rookie running backs to keep an eye on this year: Ashton Jeanty, Amarian Hampton. Those were the first two off the board at their position. Both expected to make an instant impact, but which one will get the bigger workload? We know both Pete Carroll there in, Vegas, and Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, they love to run the ball. So it's actually becoming an interesting discussion here. And Maurice Jones-Drew, he believes Hampton could actually end up with more opportunities based on a recent comment from Carroll about not leaning on just one guy with their running back group. A look at both the Raiders and Chargers offenses would suggest, though, that Jeanty will eat more in 2025. But buy or sell, Vinny, Hampton will actually end up being the one with more total carries.
Well, man, that's a good question. Just because, yeah, I mean, you got two guys, you know, Harbs likes to run the football. Pete likes to run it a lot, too. And then you got Giro there that wants to pound a rock. He don't even like wide receivers. Unless they are blockers. I think Jeanty will catch the ball out of the backfield more. I'm going to say Jeanty.
More carry? We're just talking rushes here. No dual threat factor.
You know, I mean, you could say what, you know, like what Pete said, but when did Giro not use two backs all the time?
That's true. You know, and they got the better complementary piece
so
with Najee.
So I'm still going to say Jeanty.
All right, let's see. We'll go to the NBA here. This is an interesting one. Earlier this week was the 15th anniversary of the decision, a now famous moment for LeBron James, his career, and really NBA history, because many believe that that was the single moment that started this new era of the league where players can determine their own fate, contracts, destinations, all of that stuff. Also, maybe the genesis of the Big Three mentality that's now rampant in NBA discussions. I guess it makes sense. LeBron is the face of the league, has been forever, so he was always going to draw that attention. but probably added more fuel to the fire with making it a TV special, you know, ESPN, all the build up, the hype and everything. Nonetheless here, Bob, buy or sell, this new era of, quote, player empowerment, for lack of a better term, would have naturally happened anyway, even without LeBron's decision.
Yeah, I think eventually I'll buy that for sure. And I look back 15 years already. Are you kidding me? We're going to win one ring, two rings, three rings. They brought in Bosch from Toronto.
That was embarrassing, that press conference.
But he had never, not to make excuses for him, and ESPN, they've done a lot of like dopey things in regards to decision-making in some aspects. They're the pretty much the sports monopoly when it comes to football, basketball, et cetera, et cetera. But he never had the recruiting thing. You know what I mean? You know how recruits,
right.
Because even back then, recruits with the hats, when that was happening before LeBron's press conference. So I'm thinking, well, I wasn't thinking it at the time. I was like, this guy's kind of an a-hole. You know what I mean? But now I look back, it's like, we never had that. Because you knew he was straight to the NBA. And I know he said he would have went to Ohio State if he would have went to college because of Mata and all that stuff. But I think that, by and large, was like, this is me being able to announce something for the first time. And by the way, Cleveland getting the first pick with him from Ohio. Yeah, draft's not fixed.
Yeah.
Come on, it's all luck.
Is that what it is?
The ping pong
balls. Not the weighted ping pong balls. The ink on that ball is going to be a little heavier than the other one. Which
frozen
means
envelopes. That's more fun conspiracy. Bring that back. Bring back the envelopes. All right, last time.
About the worst team just gets the first pick. How's that?
We'll close with this here. In the NFL, Colts, they are desperate for anything from Anthony Richardson at this point. Really anything to show that maybe they didn't waste the first round pick back in 2023, but the reality is looking more like Richardson will be a bust, and mostly due to health concerns and less about on-field performance. Played just 15 total games in two seasons, battled an AC joint injury in his shoulder during minicamp. Now, it does sound like he's a full go for training camp here later this month, but still not what you want to hear, and it will be a competition between him and Daniel Jones. Buy or sell, Vinny, Jones will end up starting more than half of the Colts games at quarterback this year.
Oh, I'll buy that 100%. Jones got all the reps and OTAs, mini camps, everything else. And Richardson's a turnover machine. And like you said, he's hurt a lot. You know, and he reminds me of Trey Lance. Same guy. I mean, Lance got hurt all the time, too. And what do both have in common? They didn't play in college hardly at all.
Well, maybe I don't see Anthony Richardson fetching a nice trade compensation like the Cowboys gave up for Trey Lance.
Third round pick,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, he might be done within 4 years.
And Richardson, it's a shoulder, right?
Yeah.
It seems to be kind of a nagging.
Yeah, it was the same AC joint here a couple months ago. Was the same thing that plagued him a year or so ago. Yeah,
no denying the athleticism. And I'll throw the ball 80 yards on the fly, but.
You know? That's like those pitchers that throw 102. Where's it go? You know, is it hitting the backstop or is it hitting the catcher?
And then last year, too, with Richardson, you know, he tapped out on a fourth and goal or fourth and short. You know,
I'm gassed.
I need a break.
I can't hand it off.
It's fourth down in a crucial situation. Let's bring the backup quarterback in because I'm tired. Oh, anywho, that's a Colts problem. When we come back, the Browns, well, they have problems. Maybe a new stadium isn't going to be one of them. But Daniel Oyefusi, Baltimore kid, used to cover the Ravens and the Terps for the Baltimore Sun. He'll be joining us now with ESPN. Funhouse Trip, Nolan McGraw, NFL Lunch coming up at 1. Talk some more Ravens stuff with you 2 weeks less than from training camp. American League East Report, and then Mike Harmon, Fox Sports Radio, get his thoughts on what's happening in the wild world of sports. And he knows a lot of stuff, and he's going to share it with us. Keep it in mind that he's already well in to the fantasy stuff that he's doing at SwollenDome.com. Vinny and Haney, Orioles Met scoreless, two outs, top third, Oriole Park, Camden Yards, game one of this doubleheader training camp in the NFL, less than 2 weeks away. And joining us now, as we've been bouncing around the AFC North a little bit this week, from ESPN, he's Baltimore guy, friend of the show, he's covered the Terps and the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun. Let's welcome back Window Nation guest hotline, Daniel Oyefusi. Daniel, appreciate the time, and I hope you're having a great summer here so far.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's actually been a good one. I've actually been back home, spending time with the fam and friends. So definitely not ready for training camp to start, but hey, we got to get back to work soon.
Yeah, got to get them Saturdays back on the work schedule. Before we get to the Browns, the team, which is expected to finish last, let's be honest, in the AFC North. What's all the hubbub about the new Dome Stadium there? It seemed as though it was a foregone conclusion, kind of seeing the same thing going on down in D.C. with their new one. But what's happening with this stadium, Dome, possible Super Bowls? Will this thing eventually move forward?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the owners of the Browns, the Haslams, G and D and Jimmy Haslam, you know, they've wanted to put forth this effort to build this new Dome Stadium and Brook Park, Ohio, which is, you know, suburbs of Cleveland, about, you know, 15 minutes from downtown. You know, obviously, they, like many of these new projects, these new stadiums across the NFL that we're seeing, you know, there's, you know, it's a public-private partnership that they're looking for with, while they're going to put forth some of their money, they're also looking for, you know, the state and the city to provide some money as well. You know, last year and, you know, recently, there was a lot of pushback from the city of Cleveland. The mayor wanted to keep the stadium at their downtown lakefront area, and he talked about how you know, it's kind of the Haslams abandoning the city and whatnot, and talking about the damage that it would do to the local economy. But the Haslams see it as something that's going to be great for the city and the entire state. You know, the possibility of maybe hosting a Super Bowl down the line and having way more events that can be hosted, you know, Final Fours and stuff like that. So you know, the governor did recently sign a budgeting bill that includes, you know, provisions for that new Brook Park Stadium, Dome Stadium. And it looks like, you know, while there's still, you know, some legal stuff playing out and whatnot, some stuff that's been filed, it looks like they really are taking that next step to building that in a couple of years down the line.
Hey, Daniel, I'm glad we got you on because I wanted to talk to somebody who's been to camp and mini camps and all that. Talk me through the quarterback. Give me evaluation of each guy, what you saw.
Yeah. I mean, it was a whirlwind because I've never covered a quarterback competition like that where you've got four legitimate guys competing, and you know, to try to make sure that everyone got a good amount of reps. You know, the Browns and coach Kevin Stefanski kind of switched things up. They were two spotting, so you know what that is. You know, you put a group on one field, put a group on another.
That's what
field
the Ravens do all the time too.
Exactly. So they can run through as many reps as possible. So a lot of times we saw like the vets, Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett, working on one side of the field. And then we saw the rookies, Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders, working on the other. What was interesting to me, and I know Stefanski said not to read too much into the order of practice reps or who's with what team, but it was interesting to me because at times, you know, they actually gave Joe less reps than anybody because he's the vet and he has experience in this offense. But Dylan Gabriel was actually getting a lot of reps with the first team offense, kind of splitting snaps with Kenny Pickett, and then at times we'd see Shador Sanders on another field by himself working with the second team offense, third team offense against the backup defense. I thought that the rookies looked very, very poised. I thought Dylan Gabriel came on strong really at the end of mandatory minicamp. You know, I know everyone says, why are we talking about Shador Sanders? Why are we talking about Shador Sanders? To me, he looked extremely poised throughout the entirety of the offseason workout program, and you have to add the caveat that it was against the second team defense, but I think it means something when you're a rookie and you don't look like the game is too fast for you, and that's what stood out to me. Kenny Pickett's going to be interesting to see where he fits in all of this because he was the first quarterback that they brought in here, and he was a player that the general manager, Andrew Berry, said that they really targeted at the beginning of free agency because they thought that while his career may have gotten off to a slow start, some bumps in the road, they think of him as a player who still has potential as a former first-round pick. So I don't think they're going to take four guys into the season. I think they're going to take three. I would think that those two rookies are going to do enough to show that they deserve to continue to be developed. And I think that the real decision is going to come down to which one of those vets is the starter and if they can find a way to maybe trade or possibly release the other.
Will all four play in the preseason games?
I would think so. I would think so. And I was interested because they also do have a pair of joint practices with the Panthers. They have one practice with the Panthers, and then the next week they have two practices with the Eagles. So I'm just very, very interested to see, again, Fancy said don't worry about the practice reps in mandatory minicamp and OTAs. We definitely have to pay attention to that in training camp, because he acknowledged, and I asked him, like, at that point, you're getting ready to start, get ready for the season. He said, yeah. So obviously the guys who are getting the bulk of the first team reps, those are the guys who are under serious consideration to be the starter. So I would expect definitely to see a heavy dose of the rookies in the preseason. But I think there's a chance that we'll see Kenny Pickett out there, and then Joe Flacco as well, potentially.
Now, from what you've seen in the OTAs and the mini camp, what do you like, what do you don't like, and kind of what do you foresee them down the road?
I like the state of the defense. Now, this was a unit that just a couple years ago was, you know, arguably the number one defense. You know, if they weren't number one, they were number two. That was the year that them and the Ravens were, you know, just dominating in an elite unit. And they fell off a little bit last year. I think part of that was just because of the strain that was placed on that defense when you're on the field so much and the offense really isn't doing much. But, you know, they still have Myles Garrett, who, you know, defensive player of the year a couple of years ago. I still think they have a really strong cornerback group. The strength of really that unit is the defensive line. And they added Mason Graham, you know, where they traded back from 2 to 5, got an extra first-round pick, and then added the rookie out of Michigan. And they think that, you know, he has a really high ceiling. They think that what he was doing in Michigan, it was more, you know, read and react, where they're more attacking in Cleveland, where they just want him to penetrate and be disruptive in the backfield. So they have really high hopes for him. And I think that they're due for a bounce-back year, especially if they can get some semblance of quality quarterback play, on offense. I still do obviously have questions about the offense. Like, we don't know who's going to start at quarterback, but it kind of spans, you know, beyond that. You know, they have one proven wide receiver in Jerry Jeudy, who, you know, had a breakout year last year. I don't know who wide receiver two is. They brought in Deontay Johnson, who, you know, Ravens fans know a lot about.
And Ring of Honor kind of guy.
Exactly.
If it gets cold, watch out. He don't want to go in.
Hey, man, it gets real cold in Cleveland. I learned that quick last year. But, you know, they still have a lot of questions about whether he or maybe one of these young guys is going to be able to step up. David Njoku is trying to bounce back after an injury-plagued season. Their offensive line is intact for the most part, but they're an older group. You know, outside of left tackle DeJuan Jones, they're everybody on that offensive line is over the age of 30. And they're talking about going back to the Kevin Stefanski scheme, where they're going to run the ball more. Well, they don't have Nick Chubb, who was obviously hurt the past couple years. They drafted a couple running backs in Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson. But there are a lot more questions on this offense, you know, regardless, even if you take out the quarterback situation and that competition that's going to take place this summer.
Daniel Oyefusi covers the Cleveland Browns for ESPN, Baltimore Kid. Daniel, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy your last couple of Saturdays off, and obviously we'll be talking to you a lot as we get closer to kickoff here 2025.
Most definitely. You guys take care.
All right, Daniel Oyefusi. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 of the Fan Funhouse Trip. Nolan McGraw, NFL Lunch coming up 1 o'clock. American League East Report happening as well. Mike Harmon, Fox Sports Radio. Talk to him about everything happening on this Thursday. And Sports Orioles right now, scoreless with the Mets, 2 outs, bottom of the third. Jackson Holliday at the plate. As the Orioles try to win the opener here, but just tuning in, Brian Baker was traded to Tampa for the 37th pick in this year's draft. Competitive balance pick, as they call it. It's V880 Total Request Thursday. Nolan McGraw, Mike Elias met with the media earlier today. Nolan and talked about, you know, all that trade stuff there.
That he did. We'll get into that in the Funhouse.
Quick Draw's Funhouse.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
105.7 The Fan.
So we got a text here. It says, Elias is working for his job right now. I think it's interesting that they chose to acquire a draft pick over a player. That draft pick won't do anything for the 2026 Orioles, or maybe even 2027 either. Is Elias even here by the time that player comes through? Well, it's an interesting point. Elias was actually asked that very subject, maybe less about, hey, are you even going to be here when this player develops? But still, you need to turn it around quickly. Drafting a player is going to take time. Here's what he said.
I don't view it quite that way. The draft picks are opportunities to bring really good players into the organization. And, yeah, you may keep them and draft them and develop them, and that may take two or three years, you may trade them that winter, and that can impact the team. So this is just, hopefully, you know, we're going to see what we do with the pick. I have no idea who we're taking with the 37th overall pick.
So pretty interesting to say there. I mean, hey, we could take somebody. We could flip them right away. A possibility that I didn't even initially consider when they made this trade. But it would be interesting. I don't believe we've seen anything from that this regime like that so far, where they were immediately dealing a player that they just drafted, especially one that premium in the top 40. But we'll see what happens. I mean, it makes sense on paper. You're acquiring a top 40 asset. You know, if you liked them, somebody else was probably going to take them in the same range. So that player, sure, you might like to develop them. It's a first-round pick, after all. Could be here soon. But if that also is something that you could package for an instant starting pitcher return, say at the winter meetings, not a bad thought.
Last year, Tony Pentine talked about it 2 hours ago. Ballmeister, who they invested some dough in out of the draft. I think he spent a year in the system, though. He wasn't just signed and then flipped in the offseason, but they traded him in the Eflin deal. So to Elias's point, I mean, look, let's give the guy credit. He's smarter than all three of us put together. Well, me and Vinny, anyway. Nolan, he's a rocket scientist over there. I mean, hey, by the way, you're going to have to pronounce this Yankee pitcher's name during the AL East report, so have fun with that. But he's got a plan. I'm not worried about anything in this regard with him in the draft. I would like to see him take more pitchers like everyone else. I'm more curious to see what he's going to do with an opportunity to spend dough. Not crazy Dodger, Padre, whoever, insert team that goes bananas in the offseason spending money. Phillies have done it before. But what's he going to do with an opportunity at the blessing of the owner to add? I've said it on the air before, guys. I'm reluctant for these long-term pitcher contracts because we see Corbin Burns, Exhibit A. But you sign a dude, whoever it is, and he comes in within 2 years and helps you win a World Series, and then his arm falls off, and then he never pitches again, that sort of thing, or he's out for a couple of years. You get a quick return on that investment, and he's the missing piece. I think we're kind of all in, aren't we?
Yeah, no question. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, and they should be, again, in on any top names available in the pitching market, but most people seem to be indicating that next year's free agency pitching class compared to this year, and even this year, it's a little light depending on how you look at it.
Sure.
They're saying next year could be even more thin. So with that in mind, I still think it would be the Orioles' best option to try to trade for a pitcher.
Is there going to be a Garrett Crochet-level guy?
That's the problem.
That's available. And the Orioles said it then, say it again now. He's on the all-star team, top earned run average, one of anyway. American League should have been all in on that, man. And a Magic Bean had to go to get that. And there, what was it, 2 years ago when Dylan Cease was available when he was still dealing for the White Sox and they wanted the left side of the menu for the farm system and they were reluctant to do it, brought in Flaherty instead. Who's that Crochet-level prospect that a bottom feeder team is going to be willing to sacrifice this offseason, keeping in mind that every team's going to be all over them like sharks in the water.
Right, and I guess that's where Alcantara's name comes up.
Sure.
He's assumed to go at the deadline, but if it ends up being like Crochet was assumed to go at the deadline too, and he had to wait till the offseason. So again, if you can maybe get lucky there in the offseason, you'd have to shell out a little bit less in terms of a trade. But if you're the Orioles, I mean, hey, it would be very strange, very surprising if it happened, that if the Orioles bought a pitcher at the deadline, because it goes against conventional wisdom. You're not competing. Why are you buying? You're probably paying a premium price.
No doubt.
But if Alcantara is truly going to be the only one that you think is available.
Controllable.
Exactly. Then you got to go get him because you can't sit around and wait. Oh, we'll wait for the offseason so we can pay a cheaper price. Well, he might not be available by then.
And he's had a brutal season, but coming back from Tommy John surgery, you know, a couple years removed, this is his first year back. I mean, this guy's got a Cy Young, and he's young on his resume. So they have to do something, but they need a bat, too. I think another bat in the middle of the lineup would probably bolster things offensively, right?
Let's get one more text here before we break. This one says, does Elias make this trade if Tuesday night's meltdown didn't happen? I'm not sure, but this definitely feels like the Orioles are selling high on Baker when they have the best shot to do so.
Yeah. I would say he was definitely made, because I'm guessing they've been talking about it for a little bit. You know, so that just didn't, they just didn't call yesterday and just, hey, we'll give you a 37 pick for Baker.
Yeah, they weren't that pissed that he blew the game the other day.
And the Rays weren't saying, you know, right, we liked what we saw. Yeah. You know, so you're right. I think this has been in the works.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a sign, as we've talked about, and Bordick talked about it, all Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, that, you know, they're going to be giving, not taking, coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Right now, Orioles scoreless, bottom four against the Mets. Westberg singled, Laureano at the plate, as both pitchers putting up some zeros down at Oriole Park Camden Yards. We'll come back, switch back to the NFL. A little NFL lunch for you. American League East report coming up at 1:15, and we'll talk all things sports with Mike Harmon from Fox Sports Radio. It's Total Request Thursday. Pick a song. Get your votes in. Featured Artist Friday. That reveal coming up in less than an hour.